A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations and institutions. Today, we'll wrap up our commencement series, focusing on what accomplished musicians can and have passed on to the next generation of musicians. My guests will be Joseph Polisi, who is retiring this year as president of the Juilliard School and gave the commencement address at the Curtis Institute of Music. He'll share some of the thoughts he gave the students in his speech and provide some insight into how conservatories and their graduates are stepping up to meet new challenges as the music world changes. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. All eyes were on the royal wedding this weekend, and its musical entertainment included a diverse range of artists. Among the highlights was cellist Sheku Kanna Mason, a 19-year-old who in 2016 became the first Black musician to win BBC Young Musician. According to the BBC, his wedding performance included works by Fauré and Schubert, accompanied by performers from the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, the English Chamber Orchestra, and the Philharmonia. Other performers at the wedding included Karen Gibson and the Kingdom Choir, a gospel choir, which sang Stand By Me and Amen, This Little Light of Mine. In another bit of royal history-making, the ranks of the trumpeters sounding the fanfare at the start of the wedding included the first woman trumpet player to perform at a royal wedding. The Evening Standard reported that Lance Corporal Kate Sanford was among those chosen from the Household Cavalry Band. Among the other five band members was her husband, making them the first married couple to perform at such a ceremony. Deco was on hand to record the ceremony and had already released the electronic version for streaming within hours. A CD version is expected to be available in stores by May 25th. According to Decca parent company Universal Music, a donation from the sale of each album will be made to the Royal Couples Foundation, supporting various charitable causes. Houston Grand Opera announced that it has named Yoon Sun Kim as principal guest conductor, its first guest conductor since 1993. In its announcement, Houston Grand Opera said Kim would conduct at least one opera per season, beginning in the 2019-2020 season. Kim first conducted the opera company in an October 2017 production of La Traviata, which also served as her U.S. conducting debut. She studied composition and conducting in Seoul and Stuttgart, received first prize at the International Jesus Lopez Cobos Opera Conducting Competition, and this month is conducting the Cincinnati Symphony and May Festival Chorus in the Verdi Requiem. And finally, the music world this week was stunned by the sudden death of composer Matt Marks, who was a founding member of the ensemble Alarm Will Sound. According to the New York Times, Marks was a French horn player who also sang, acted, and played the keyboard with the chamber orchestra, in addition to composing works. The ensemble has been preparing for a tour in China later this month. Marks, who died of heart failure, was 38. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. I've spent the past few weeks speaking with accomplished musicians who are giving back to younger artists through performance, teaching opportunities, or as speakers at commencement ceremonies. We'll close out this series this week with a conversation with Joseph Polisi, who is stepping down this year as president of the Juilliard School, where he has served for 34 years. He was recognized for his work with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, where he was invited to give the commencement address. His tenure at Juilliard has been marked by expansions both in the school's physical campus as well as its curriculum, including new programs to train students in jazz, historical performance, and opera, among others. The school also expanded its reach through new online and digital programs and plans to open a branch campus in China. I reached out to him to ask about how music schools and conservatories have been changing with the times and what advice he is passing on to tomorrow's musical leaders.
The main message was something that I have been discussing and thinking about and writing about for a long time, and that is the responsibility of artists beyond the stage in communities large and small around the world. That it's no longer just the performance, if it ever was, that is the responsibility of the artist, but now it's also to be an advocate for the arts in communities large and small around the globe, and to make sure that the arts are understood as powerful components of the best elements and values of our society.
What are some of the ways that you envision these graduates being able to do that, and what are some of the things you suggested or advised them?
Right. I mean, there are many ways, as I've seen over the years I've been at Juilliard, and certainly aware of the good work at Curtis as well. But I would say it's reaching out to the community through their music, in this case, in performances, in working as teachers for a day or two, in community schools, and making sure that teachers, principals, parents, and obviously children all become engaged in understanding why the arts reflect the very best principles and values of the human experience, whether it's nuance, empathy, creativity, imagination, energy, joy, which are so necessary, especially for children, but for all individuals. And I feel very badly that school systems, large and small, around the United States, have really, for a great degree, lost integrated and significant music programs. And this is a real loss for the education of America's children.
Well, now, as you mentioned, this is a theme that you've been writing about, speaking about, teaching about now throughout a good part of your career. What are some ways that thinking has evolved as you served all that time at Juilliard and got to oversee the landscape from that perspective?
Where I've seen evolution and new ideas is that once young artists embrace the idea that there is a sense of responsibility beyond the stage, they come up with the most wonderful creative ways of using that art, whether it's working with children in New Orleans to repair hurricane damage, and then to have plays and concerts and participatory events with those children to get them away from the destruction that they've seen. Or some of our actors, including Adam Driver, who's now very well known in the Star Wars pictures, has created a program he calls Arts in the Armed Forces, where he takes American contemporary plays and performs them for veterans and for currently enlisted individuals in the armed forces, and using his own art and his colleagues' art to present new ideas that would ordinarily not be addressed by these soldiers. And there's just a whole host of fantastic ideas that these young people have come up with and will continue to do so that I find so encouraging.
Well, as you prepare to step down from Juilliard, how would you evaluate the state of music schools and conservatories that are out there and how they've adapted to this changing landscape?
I think that the conservatories and music schools of the United States as a group, are probably at the highest level that one could find all around the world in terms of not only performance excellence, but intellectual rigor and addressing the whole individual, not just the performing artist. And I think that's an important thing. I'm sure, and I know for a fact, that many schools around the United States are now also embracing the idea of entrepreneurship. That is to say, asking young artists to think out of the box, to figure out ways, once again, going back to the idea of the artist being in a community, of ways that to use your art to touch larger groups of people who ordinarily wouldn't be traditional concert goers. And so I think that idea has formed up in all sorts of different ways around the United States, and all to the good, especially addressing issues of each community, which of course are quite different in different regions of the country.
And have you found the schools and their students kind of reaching out and collaborating or sharing ideas that can then be implemented in other curricula?
Well, yes, I've seen that there have been efforts at replicating and embracing different programs that one sees in a specific institution, and then is, as I've already said, evolves into something else at another institution. But I do think that what is most important in terms of working with other disciplines is in the K through 12 realm, and there I really feel that the insertion of a serious arts program in schools at those levels really does enhance the overall educational environment, whether it's better attendance, less bullying, greater joy, greater conduct. There are peers that are admired because of their dedication to what they do in drama, dance, and music. You see this in schools, as I've seen it in the New York City schools that where we've been involved. There's definitely a positive impact. Unfortunately, most urban school systems have not been able to effectively and comprehensively implement these arts programs. They did exist. Certainly, I was a product of those programs back in the 50s and the 60s. But they've to a great degree disappeared, or at least diminished, with the financial struggles of the 70s, 1970s, and they really haven't come back except episodically, and that's too bad.
Well, community outreach was an important aspect of what you brought to Juilliard, and what would you cite as some examples of the ways you were able to reach more people, both in terms of students coming into the school, but also reaching out and deciphering the needs that in the community that Juilliard could fill?
Well, I think of three programs right off the top of my head. Number one, our first community outreach program was, and it still exists, as the Gluck Fellowship Program, where we ask musicians, actors, and dancers to go into hospitals, hospices, nursing homes, aid centers, etc., to senior centers, to just present their art, to talk with the individuals who are there, to interact with them, not only as artists, but as human beings. And that's had an incredibly positive impact on the artists, not just the audience members. Because sometimes at a place like Juilliard or Curtis, such high standards and such a rarefied atmosphere, one thinks that, you know, just playing from the stage and getting it right and moving on is the whole story. But it's much more. It's about communication and touching your audience. And I think I've seen how students have seen how in these non-traditional settings of, you know, of hospital day rooms or of wards and hospitals and hospices, where their music, for example, has just been so impactful and powerful for the individuals who experience them because of the suffering that they're going through. And this is a relief. This is a human touch that didn't exist before. We then have a program that involves our students actually teaching for a day or two per week in New York City public schools called the Morse Fellowship programs. And here the experience is deeper in the sense of teaching, where you actually work with music teachers for the most part and complement the teaching and the programs that are going on already, but provide a deeper experience for the children. And this not only helps the children and our students, but it gives fantastic experience to our students to learn how to teach in all grade levels. And the third program that comes to mind is our music advancement program, which we've been doing since 1990, which is a program for underrepresented children in music, in which about 100 children come to Juilliard on Saturdays, and they go through a full day of intensive music experience with private lessons, chorus, music history, music theory, ear training experiences. And they then can move on to either Juilliard's pre-college or other similar programs around the city. And we've seen how this has really had an impact on children who ordinarily would never get this type of experience. So those are just three examples that come to mind.
Hmm. What would you say are still, even as they adapt curricula, what would you say are the biggest challenges that music schools are facing and dealing with today?
The biggest challenge is financial in terms of scholarship assistance. Since 2008 and the results of that recession, families have been struggling to be able to meet even a certain percentage of the cost of going to school at a place like Juilliard. Now, Curtis, wonderfully, is a full tuition school, but even there, you know, there are needs of physical plant and faculty salaries and pianos and all of the other things that are necessary to keep a cutting edge on a program. And so I see around the country families really working very, very hard and trying to figure out the best way to get the best financial aid for their children. And as a result, places like Juilliard are working very hard to provide as much financial aid and to defer or to not have at all any debt, so that when the student goes into the profession after graduation, they are not dragged down by heavy student debt. And in a field like music or dance or drama for Juilliard, these are not fields that promise high levels of compensation or even employment for that matter. So that's a very, very big issue. I think a second issue is the nature of higher education today in the United States, and the fact that there's such an emphasis on vocational elements and potential compensation, and a disregard for intellectual rigor and curiosity and content. And I'm not saying that when one goes to college, you don't expect to get a job afterwards. Of course one does. But at the same time, I do not believe that you go to college just to get a job. I believe first and foremost that you go to college to become a functioning adult with improved intellect and judgmental powers, and in the case of artists, the sense of nuance and subtlety and understanding of what your art form is all about. And these are very, very, very valuable talents within a society, but I think they're undervalued for sure in the United States, and that's a real shame. But I think that in our current environment of less than civilized discourse, the arts are often put on a back burner.
Well, when looking at the graduates' perspective, things have also changed a lot, because they're not necessarily just coming in, practicing, honing their skills, and then leaving to necessarily get a solo or orchestral performance job. What are some of the challenges that graduates face in the changing world? And flip side, what are some of the new opportunities that present themselves to the students?
Right. Well, I think, first of all, what you've described as being a soloist or an orchestral musician, I don't think that, in terms of a majority of graduates of any distinguished music school at any time in the 20th century was an automatic thing. It was still a, a small percentage of students that actually went that way. But I think today, with even more competition and fewer opportunities, one has to understand that the graduate of a music school today has to be multifaceted and has to be nimble in accommodating to the current climate. And so that goes back to the point of entrepreneurship that I mentioned earlier, where one thinks out of the box and tries to use one's talent and artistry in ways that are perhaps unconventional. That is to say that you might have a portfolio career where you're a freelance musician, you're a teacher, you're an administrator, you create programs, for example, you create new art forms through collaborative activities with other artists, whether they be other musicians or actors or dancers, or you cross forms and go from pop to classical and see what you come up with. And of course, in today's digital world, there's an enormous new opportunity that really didn't exist even 25 years ago for musicians and dancers and actors to get their art out through all sorts of obvious venues, whether it's YouTube or Instagram or whatever vehicle they wish to choose. And so now you can actually have full recitals online, accessible to anybody who wants to see them and hear them. Whereas before, you were really boxed into the idea of having to work with a recording company and getting your recording recorded and distributed and marketed. Now it's a completely different world.
Also, another of your focuses at Juilliard was the international reach, and more particularly, or more recently, that's included expansion into Asia. What can you say that the U.S. experience can lend to other societies in terms of music education? And also, what can we learn going outside and looking at other cultures and bringing that back?
Well, Juilliard and Curtis, for that matter, have always been international schools. Juilliard's international population is slightly over 30%, and I think Curtis's is even higher. But in Juilliard's case, we weren't what I would call a global school. We expected people to come to New York, but we didn't really reach out to them where they were. And so, in fact, after the recession, our board chair, Bruce Kovner, and I spoke about how we could have greater global reach because of the need to really connect with other individuals and other countries all around the world. And as a result, we are going to have a branch campus that will open in 2019, September, in Tianjin, China. And we believe that we will learn a great deal about not only Chinese culture, of course, but of the response of Chinese artists to symphonic and chamber music in particular, two areas we're going to emphasize, as well as vocal coaching. This is the third area. And so we expect to learn a great deal from that. And at the same time, we hope that our traditions of how we perform in orchestras and the importance of chamber music in particular, we hope we'll have a positive impact on our Chinese colleagues. So the branch campus in Tianjin, by the way, will not just be for Chinese students, although I'm sure a majority of them will be from China, but it will be from outside of China as well, in East Asia, and for that matter, any place else in the world. I have a deep regard and respect for international study. When I was a junior in college, I lived for a year in France and studied in French. And although I wasn't a French major, I learned so much and learned so much about people and their approaches to life. And I think America hasn't been doing enough of that recently. And that's why I think if we can do that in China and perhaps other ventures as time goes ahead, it'll be good for all parties.
So, circling back to your advice to graduates, what would you say would be the one or two definite things you would advise a new a new graduate, a music graduate, to do in the next year or two?
Don't get discouraged. Don't get discouraged, because there'll be a lot of people out there that will say, this won't work out. Or my God, who's going to hire a clarinetist or something like that, or a bassoonist, which is what I am. People tend to talk in more discouraging terms than they should. And secondly, continue to have a high degree of idealism in everything that you do. And if you don't have any idealism right now, I suggest that you acquire it. Because in the field like the arts, you have to believe that what you're doing is important for your society. And that's a message that I try to deliver every day to all our students, that your role as an artist in society is just as important as any other profession that's out there. And in fact, the artist often, through his or her activities, brings a higher level of positive results than perhaps any other profession out there. Mm-hmm. So be idealistic, don't get discouraged, and you know, just don't give up on yourself, which is something, you know, that's easy to do, or at least may happen, because it's not easy out there. It isn't easy out there, but with talent and dedication and energy, they will persevere and succeed.
Mm-hmm. And so what's next up for you? What are some of the things you're looking to do and put your mind to now?
Well, as we were talking about, I'm going to continue to be involved after I step down on June 30th as president with the China Project, because we're not even going to be open for about a year. And so my role will be to, as chairman of the board of the school, the Tianjin Juilliard School, will be to make sure that the Juilliard flavor is there, and to work with our Chinese partners who have been wonderful in developing our new building and a new curriculum and new faculty and new students and new performance activities. It's a pretty exciting venture, and I'm looking forward to it.
That was Joseph Polisi, who is retiring as president of the Juilliard School after 34 years. He was invited to give the commencement address last weekend at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, where he was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award. Also honored this year at Curtis was George Walker, the first African-American composer to win the Pulitzer Prize and who received the President's Alumni Award at Curtis. Juilliard held its ceremonies this weekend with commencement speaker Wynton Marsalis. You can find more information on Curtis at curtis.edu, and Juilliard's website can be found at juilliard.edu. All of us here at the Classical Network would like to extend a hearty congratulations to all music students who are graduating this year, and we wish you the best of luck as you begin this leg of your musical journey. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on La Tempo, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.